This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Plus CBD by CV Sciences. As you know, I'm a big proponent of CBD oil to tonify the endocannabinoid system. I've found that it helps people relax and can support restful sleep, a real breakthrough in herbal products. The CBD brand I take personally and recommend to my patients is Plus CBD from CV Sciences. And now I'm excited about a new product from Plus CBD, Plus CBD Maximum Strength Soft Gels. They provide higher levels of CBD for the greatest impact on everyday health. And with pre-measured servings and no hemp flavor, Plus CBD Maximum Strength Soft Gels are a no-mess, no-fuss way to take advantage of CBD's myriad of benefits. To learn more and to order, visit pluscbdoil.com and use coupon code HOFFMAN for 20% off. That's pluscbdoil.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. And I believe this is our first Q&A for 2021, right, Layla?
Yes! Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year, everyone. And, you know, we're going to start the year with a bang. You know, hopefully we'll provide you with some interesting segments. We've got lots of questions. You can send questions to radioprogram@aol.com. The mailbag is full, fortunately, and we'll take some of those questions in just a moment. But first, you know, I'm going to introduce a feature. This may become a regular feature, which is the patient of the month.
Or
we could alternatively, the case of the week.
The case of the week.
And, you know, sometimes, you know, we're engaged in clinical practice. We don't just, you know, this is not just theoretical. We see patients on a regular basis. And came across a very interesting patient whose case, I think, has relevance and is illustrative for many of you, especially those of you who are interested in taking vitamin D. So the background on this is that this is around holiday time. So, you know, already there was a bit of a holiday lull and we weren't seeing that many patients. But right around the time of the holiday, we got an urgent call from one of our veteran patients, patient who's been with us for many years, very concerned that we should see her son. And the story on that is that we'd seen the son before, previously, but, you know, he's a healthy...
Healthy young man.
He's, what, 39? And, you know, he'd had a minor problem a couple of years ago. We saw him and we helped him with that problem. And so she called him. She says, you really need to see my son because he has been taking astronomical amounts of vitamin D. And the mother was very concerned. And so I said, yeah, we're happy to see him and evaluate him, you know, have him come in, you know, we'll, you know, take good history and examine him and, you know, do appropriate tests to make sure that he hasn't gotten into trouble with the vitamin D. So he comes in, this young man, and I asked him, you know, what's your history of taking vitamin D? And he said that he's been taking vitamin D. He has a habit of taking Mondays through Thursdays.
Four days a week.
He takes the weekend off.
Yeah.
So he says he takes four vitamin Ds in the morning and four vitamin Ds in the afternoon. And I said, well, how much vitamin D are you taking?
Yeah.
You know, because it could have been like 1,000 or...
Yeah.
And he showed me a picture on his phone, and it was 5,000. So let's do the math here.
So 20,000 in the morning...
20,000 in the morning,
four times five,
and again, times two, is 40,000 a day.
40,000 a day.
But he was taking it only 4 days a week. So that averages out to 22.86 thousand per day.
Right, per day.
So, you know, we have patients taking 2,000, 4,000, 5,000, sometimes 10,000.
Yes.
But nobody's taking 22,857 IUs per day.
Yeah.
IUs per day. And so I said, well, how, you know, why are you doing this?
And he says, I was glad he was still walking and talking.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I said, well, why are you doing this? He says, well, I heard that Dr. Fauci is taking vitamin D. And I said, Dr. Fauci admitted to taking vitamin D, but he's not taking that much vitamin D. Surely he's not taking that much. He says, but if Dr. Fauci's taking it, I'm going to take it. But he's just started taking it like, and I said, well, how long have you been doing that for? And he says, well, since like, you know, April or May, you know, since the early part of the pandemic. So he's been doing it for several months. He says with some inconsistency. So there's some like little lapses on that. And then I asked him, you know, how long have you been off it? Because I think his mother called and then it took a couple of days for him to come in.
Yes.
Because that had something to do with the tests that we did. You know, like if he'd been off for a month, I'd say, well, you know, then maybe things have simmered down. But he'd only been off it for 2 or 3 days. Mm. He saw us after Christmas and he said he stopped around Christmas. So two or three days. So how... You know, the first question I asked is, how you feel? And he goes, I feel fine.
Yeah.
He says, except, you know, he was having a little bit of pain in his hip from running. He's a runner.
He's a runner.
Very
so
active.
That's why, yeah.
3 days a week, he runs 3 to 6 miles. So he's a big guy, 6'4", 190 pounds, mm-hmm. but slender.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I weighed him at about 175.
Oh, okay.
He's very slim, but he's a runner.
Slim, trim guy.
And 6'4".
Yeah, yeah, tall, thin guy. So, you know, so what are the, what would we be looking for in terms of the symptoms of vitamin D intoxication?
Intoxication.
Yeah.
Extreme fatigue, maybe secondary to kidney or liver problems.
Yes, because you can get kidney stones.
Yeah.
You can get loss of appetite, which is probably secondary to the liver. You can get excessive thirst, excessive urination. I'm reading here from Medical News Today. Dehydration, constipation, irritability and nervousness. Some of these symptoms are similar to what's called hyperparathyroidism, where they have elevated calcium. Elevated calcium causes irritability. Mm. In medical school, we learned the mnemonic of moans, bones, groans, and stones for hyperparathyroidism or hypercalcemia. Moans, psychic moans, like psychological symptoms, groans due to pain in the muscles, muscle aches and pains, stones, kidney stones, but also that the kidney stones could be painful. They could be causing groans. Moans, and bones. And osteoporosis.
Yeah.
Long-term, you can get osteoporosis.
Because the calcium is up, it's out of the bones.
Yes.
Right.
Right. Because, okay, so... You can get excess. You can get calcification of your arteries and soft tissues long term. You know, and you know that. But you know, he seemed fine. But I said, let's do a very thorough workup on you because you are taking astronomical amounts of vitamin D. So we did the tests, and the results are in. Drum roll! By the way, you know what? All I told him was stop taking vitamin D. And make sure you hydrate well. Drink, because...
Flush the kidneys,
because you can get the formation of calcium oxalate stones, but you know, drinking more water can help to flush that. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, but he's fine. You know, so, okay, so blood tests.
Yes.
Drum roll, please. Okay. Amazing blood test, because...
What's his vitamin D level?
I tested it two ways. I tested the 25-hydroxy, which is the standard way that we test.
Yes, 25-OH vitamin D.
It was 95.9. Now, the threshold for toxicity is over 100. So he was under the threshold for toxicity.
That's amazing.
I thought he might be like 250 or something.
Oh, yeah. Taking as much as he was taking.
Right. And so the other thing is we checked for what's called 125-dihydroxy vitamin D, which is the metabolite of vitamin D. That's the sort of body-ready vitamin D. You can get it as a medication, but it's not available over the counter.
Right.
And we wanted to make sure that wasn't high. That also wasn't high. It was high normal. Mm. We looked at his parathyroid hormone, which typically gets suppressed.
With much vitamin D.
But that's not bad. I mean, it went down to like 16, which is kind of low. And we looked at his calcium, importantly, because we wanted to see if all this is causing high calcium. And it did not. We looked at calcium two ways. Regular blood test, the standard calcium that everybody gets, was 9.9. The range is 8.6 to 10.5. And we looked at something called ionized calcium.
Smack dab in the middle of normal.
Smack dab normal.
Yeah.
And his ionized calcium was 5.3. The normal of that is, it was 4.5 to 5.6. He's 5.3, smack dab in the room. So my take home on that is...
don't try this at home.
Exactly.
This person was lucky.
Thank you. Right. So we're not endorsing this.
No, no.
But what it suggests is there's a great margin for safety of vitamin D even in high doses. Now, admittedly, this is a young man.
Yes.
Relatively big young man and healthy young man. No underlying health conditions.
No.
Where you can run into a little more problems with, but because there are actually case reports of people taking as little as 10,000 getting toxic with vitamin D.
Now, also, his kidney function was normal?
Kidney function is totally normal.
Liver function is normal?
You're bringing up something very important, which is if you have limited kidney function, if you have chronic renal failure, kidney disease, or liver disease, the vitamin D can build up more.
Yes, because it's not being metabolized properly.
Excellent. Thank you. Great.
Yeah.
In tuberculosis, tuberculosis is, by the way, associated with high calcium sometimes. So we have to be careful in tuberculosis. Huh. Not a common thing.
Yeah.
In hyperparathyroidism, you can attempt to lower the PTH with vitamin D, but be careful because, you know, you're already getting a drive towards calcium deposition and high calcium with the hyperparathyroidism. So got to be careful. A medical condition called sarcoidosis doesn't like a lot of vitamin D. And in fact, there's a whole protocol for treating with sarcoidosis with vitamin D deprivation.
Yes.
And then there's a rare condition, histoplasmosis, where you don't, you know, want to put a lot of vitamin D in. So anyway, I think I'm going to write this up for a little medical journal because it is of interest.
It's fascinating.
It's a fascinating...
We were waiting with bated breath,
yes.
for these test results.
Right. And we thought, you know, first of all, I said, relax, have a nice holiday.
Yes.
We'll let you know.
Yeah.
I think you're okay. I want to verify that. But we're not doing anything different because, you know, we're not going to put you into the hospital for dialysis here.
No.
You know, just stop taking the vitamin D.
Right.
Okay, the other thing I told him is you don't need to take vitamin D for the rest of the month. Take the month off. But I actually told him to resume taking vitamin D.
After a month?
At a much lower dose.
Okay.
What seems like an astronomical dose, 5,000 a day, but that's one-eighth of what he was taking.
Yes.
And he says he's going to skip weekends anyway, because he kind of, you know, he's 39.
He's a young guy. He's out and about. He's
partying,
not
hardy,
his vitamins
whatever.
With him or anything like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. You know, it's like, give him the weekend off.
Yeah. Monday through Friday with 5,000 is good over the winter. That's
and
good.
Boy, was he happy to hear this. And his mother, you know, poor mother. Like,
oh, my goodness. I'm talking to her on the phone, and she was like, okay, we're going to check it out. Don't worry.
We'll you did talk to her?
Yes. She was very upset.
Yeah. Well, she got some good news when I shared that with him. And,
you
know, and he says, you got to give me all the information because I know my mom is going to interrogate me. And I said, yes, like a North Korean interrogator.
Well, no. This is such an interesting case study.
Yep.
Really.
Okay. So you know, I think the implication is those of you who take a lot of vitamin D, I mean, you should get checked and should get your levels monitored, but it's a lot safer than it's made out to be.
Yeah. Good news. All right. Well, Dr. Hoffman, should we start with a question
Let's start with a question.
Yeah. We have one from Lorraine. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, first of all, heartfelt thanks for the blessings you are in our lives with the wisdom, caring, and guidance you share in such a down-to-earth manner. Oh, that's so nice.
Oh, that's so nice. That's
Thank
precisely
you,
our mission statement. Yeah.
Yeah. I recently noted some knot-like lumps beneath my ring finger and shared it during a virtual appointment with my naturopath. He believes I have the beginning of something I never heard of before, Dupuytren's contracture.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm 74 years old. Do you know of any natural things I could do to delay the progress of this condition?
Yes. There is some evidence that vitamin E in higher doses may be helpful. That's a protocol that's been used in Peyronie's disease, which is a similar mechanism, is excess collagen deposition in the penis. But excess collagen in the tendons of the hands is the Dupuytren's situation.
Wow.
And so high-dose vitamin E, not that effective, in my opinion.
What about systemic enzymes for something like that?
Systemic enzymes might be
You almost want to inject the enzymes.
They in fact, you just invented something. You want to start a whole. You want to start a biomedical company.
No. This is probably something in memory that I've heard.
There is a thing. Yeah, it's called it's called collagenase.
Oh, collagenase.
Right, injections.
Right. Okay.
Which are used, and I think there's some off-label use for Peyronie's syndrome, but it definitely is used in the hands. I have a doorman in my building in Manhattan who has this problem, and he eagerly shows me his hands, you know, like, what can I do? And I said, well, try the injections. And the injection is called Xiaflex, spelled with an X, X-I-A-F-E-L-E-X. It's even advertised on TV. And it is somewhat effective. It's just designed to sort of dissolve away the collagen. The oral systemic enzymes also... The object is to do that, but they're not injected locally. He didn't get the greatest results with that. He had to get surgery ultimately. Okay. And even the surgery wasn't that satisfactory. It released his fingers, so his fingers weren't curled up and, you know, immobile, but it wasn't perfect.
So the collagenase didn't
Do the trick, but it can for some people in early stages. Maybe it's worth a try. There was a lot of information about PABA for this. High dose PABA, which is a B vitamin, PABA, and the problem, and it was actually provided in very high doses in like little packets and sachets, and there was a company that I think went out of business because it was so arduous and unpalatable to take these massive amounts of PABA for Peyronie's disease or Dupuytren's that I think that therapy has fallen out of favor. But if anybody out there has used those therapies and, you know, wants to claim efficacy of those, I'd love to hear about it. And you know, there's some evidence that maybe DMSO has a good effect, but DMSO, the use of that's limited because it really makes you smell bad when you apply DMSO to your skin. It gets absorbed, but then you exude this funny odor. Yeah.
Okay, that's not funny.
If you ever had a patient who used DMSO come into your office, you would never forget that smell. It's a distinctive smell.
Oh, well, Lorraine, best of luck to you. So collagenase, ask your doctor.
Yeah, hand surgeon or the
hand surgeon, right? Okay. We've got a question about the COVID vaccine, Dr. Hoffman. And this is from Paul the Obscure.
Paul the Obscure.
Yeah, Paul the Obscure, he calls himself.
Is he one of the former popes? I mean, was there a pope in like the year...
Called the Obscure?
In the year 972, named Pope Paul the Obscure?
I don't think so.
He had a very short reign. Yeah, you know, it was like 6 months. And then
he was obscure. Actually, Paul has two questions. The first one is, why not inject the spike protein directly instead of the mRNA that codes for it?
Well, that's interesting conceptually because what you're doing with in the Moderna vaccine and in the Pfizer vaccine is you're injecting the instructions for the body to make the spike protein.
It sounds a little sci-fi.
It is a little sci-fi because it's like something the body doesn't naturally make.
Yeah.
But you make the spike protein, which then triggers an immune reaction against the spike protein, which makes the virus less likely to attach using the spike protein as the anchor. So the question is, where would you get all that spike protein? Well, I guess with biotechnology, you could manufacture the spike protein in a vat and then inject it into people.
Right.
But it might be more elegant and more efficient to get the body to do the work of manufacturing it rather than making it in a vat. Programming yeast to manufacture spike protein. I guess it's doable. Would that be as efficacious? Would it be feasible? It actually eliminates one step, which is the RNA instructions that we inject into people.
Right.
So, I mean, you'd have to ask vaccinologist.
Is that why some people call it being genetically modified?
You know, and I've looked at that, and I'm very fascinated by this idea because we learned in biology that it's a one-way street from DNA to RNA. in the human body, that RNA cannot make DNA. It just goes, DNA makes RNA, which is messenger RNA, which then goes
to the ribosome,
which creates a template to make proteins, as like instructions, genetic code. But you can't go backwards and incorporate that RNA into the DNA. And then somebody wrote a very interesting article, and you know, I got to say, it's beyond my pay grade. When I read this stuff, I go, could it possibly be true? Because it's very sophisticated molecular biology that he's talking. He's saying that generally that's the case, but there is what are called retroviruses, and retroviruses cause you to make RNA go back to retrovert to the DNA. So I go to follow this argument. I go, wow, that sounds scary. Like, whoa, now we're going to get like this code to make spike protein in our DNA. And do we want that? And then somebody who seemed to be even of a higher pay grade reviewed it and said, yeah, this guy who wrote this article, he's just an electrical engineer and he's, you know, writing about his stuff.
Lot of electrical engineers writing about this stuff.
They're brilliant.
They are.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting.
They think out of the box.
Yes, they do.
So the guy who was the more authoritative guy said, nah, that's not going to happen. So I got right now, I mean, I'm open to any, you know, potentially unforeseen possibilities with the vaccine.
Sure.
Because it's new. It was rushed into production, operational warp speed.
Yeah.
And perhaps we overlooked something. It's happened so many times with drugs. Mm. It's happened so many times with vaccines that we've overlooked some potential problems.
I've also heard it said that they've been looking into manufacturing this type of vaccine against coronaviruses.
Right.
For years.
And this was the impetus to get them to do it because they, you need a lot of testing, a lot of like, and now all of a sudden it's like, boom, 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 let's get it done, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Paul the Obscure has another question.
Uh-oh. You're more obscure.
I remember Carlton Frederick saying, God help you if the doctors don't have a name for what's wrong with you. Is this still true?
It is very true. And in fact, we sort of specialize in dealing with these types of cases here. You know, one of my favorite expressions is to patients is when it comes to a particular disease, you're auditioning for the part, but you haven't gotten it yet, fortunately. And it's people who have some abnormalities, but that we can't really put a name on it. You know, some blood test, you know, glitches that don't quite meet the threshold of a diagnosis of a full-blown condition. And, you know, we can sometimes forestall the development, you know, and I say, we hope you don't get that part ever.
Sure.
You know, you're auditioning for the part, but we hope you never get it. And we can then maybe say, well, let's, rather than waiting for you to get a full-blown disease, for which, okay, now once you have the disease, then we can pull the trigger. We can give you all the medications that are designated for that disease. But if you don't have the disease, you're not eligible for the medications preventively. So, you know, we then do early intervention as to forestall the development of a condition.
Right. Okay. Paul the Obscure, thank you for those questions. Ah, here comes one from Daniel. Question to Dr. Hoffman, what are your thoughts on supplementing with nucleotides? Most of us don't eat the foods highest in nucleotides, like organ meats, especially intestines. Are nucleotides then a missing nutrient that many could benefit from taking? Shouldn't we go back to eating kidney pie?
It's very interesting because, after all, what is the vaccine? But it's a nucleotide vaccine. It's a nucleotide, which is RNA, in like a lipospheric nanoparticle, which then is taken up by the cells and then recognized and does its job. So nucleotides are the building blocks of RNA and DNA. And so you might say, well, that sounds kind of wackadoo, like just giving those things, is that going to make, you know, is that going to help in any way?
Right.
But there's actually research on this. And I was reading a paper in this month's issue of the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, hot off the presses. And there was a study on, cancer patients with oropharyngeal cancer, where they're getting a lot of radiation and chemo, and they can't swallow, they can't eat, and they were given an immune supporting formula that consists of omega-3 fatty acids, arginine, and nucleotides. And the omega-3 for inflammation, the arginine, because arginine has an immune boosting effect.
Yes.
And arginine has been arginine for the immune system was pioneered while I was in med school, at my med school, by a Dr. Sam Seifter, who is a big arginine fan. And RNA has been used for at least 20, 30 years in a surgical formula. This is essentially what they were testing was a formula called, I think it's called IMPACT. Which is a formula that surgeons use to kind of shape patients up to have a better surgical outcome, you know, like weak and debilitated patients. And so it's got omega-3, arginine, and
nucleotides.
And the idea is that the nucleotides are an available substrate for DNA to synthesize proteins. And if you don't have enough nucleotides, well, the DNA is going, where's my raw material so that I can make messenger RNA so that, you can make proteins for repair and growth? And so there is science on this, but it's kind of a fuzzy logic science. It's not really that highly substantiated. And the idea of using nucleotides has been around for a long time.
Yeah.
And I know that, you know, one of the companies that advertises on radio makes a nucleotide formula that, you know, purports to do all these things to support immunity and to, you know, support tissue repair. And, but, you know, the best source is organ meats. And what's interesting is that when you eat muscle meat, you're going to get a lot less nucleotides. You get more from liver and kidney. And that's why they say nose to tail, nose to tail.
Kidney pie. Let's go back to the 1900s of eating more offal.
Well, it sounds awful, but it's spelled O-F-F-A-L.
Offal meaning,
Right,
organ meats.
And most countries until recently, you know, use the whole animal. And here, you know, all we want is like the filet mignon. We give the rest, we turn the rest into dog food.
Even our Stone Age ancestors instinctively knew, this is how nature is wonderful, to go for the organ meats and leave the flesh behind or for maybe other
they
animals.
They prize the organ meats.
Prize the organ meats.
Right.
Which is, well, Daniel.
One thing I used to like, you know, when I went to Spain, riñones al Jerez. Kidneys in sherry sauce. Very good. It tastes very good. But, you know, it's for the, shall we say, the adventurous palate. We got a break now, but when we return, more of your questions. Radioprogram@AOL.com. Starting off 2021 with a bang with your questions. And we'll be right back with more.